That's trumpeter, composer, and band leader Thaddeus Joseph Jones, better known to the rest of us as Thad Jones, one of the Jones boys out of Pontiac, Michigan, leading his all-star cast with Steamin'. By the way, the other Jones boys include Hank Jones, a virtuoso on piano, and Elvin, a master drummer. It's the first track on his acclaimed 1957 album, After Hours, also featuring Frank West on flute and tenor sax, Mal Waldron on piano, Kenny Burrell on guitar, Paul Chambers on bass, and Art Taylor on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And what are we going to be talking about today? Well, it's Day 3 of confirmation hearings for U.S. Supreme Court nominee Neil Gorsuch, and I'm chuckling because this has been a surreal week so far. Who President Donald Trump has selected to fill the vacancy created by the death of Justice Antonin Scalia last year. With robust Republican support, Gorsuch seems poised to join the nation's highest court. Republicans savored an earlier victory last year when they blocked consideration of President Barack Obama's nominee, Merrick Garland, after a 247-day wait for a hearing that never materialized. The U.S. Supreme Court battle will add to a growing list of victories for a newly invigorated and emboldened Republican Party. The flip side of the coin, however, is that the party's gains are showing up more and more the humiliating defeats of the Democratic Party, which seems unable to beat back Republican encroachments in its historic territories. So while the party loses ground and power, the Democratic Party, that is, largely the result of self-inflicted wounds, the people continue to suffer. They clamor for help. So we deal with the question, is it time to repeal and replace the Democratic Party? Well, it's funny how politics works. This week, we saw many glimpses of the nature of the rancorous relationship, if there is one at all, between the Democrats and the Republicans. But we see how both have been damaged. Even though the Republicans, I would say, are far ahead of the Democrats in terms of the wins that they have scored so far, it's not a joyride for them either. People are turned off. They're disgusted with politics. They're disgusted with the Democratic Party. They're disgusted with the Republican Party. And even those who are not affiliated with either of the parties are disgusted with what has happened and continues to happen with independent movements. So the feeling is that there is something happening in the way of governance, but it doesn't in any way involve Democratic input from the people. It is government not by the people for the people. It is government against the people. Government isolated from and insulated against the will of the people. The people pretty much are on their own until they're needed for support on one issue or the other, or one election or another. But in the meantime, as we travel along, we clearly have the feeling that we are on our own. And not in a good way, because the anxieties that we have, the challenges that we face, we are left to our own devices to deal with them. We've talked a lot of times here about the fact that we are politically, for the most part, those of us who are neither in the Republican camp or the Democratic camp, or even those who actually are, we are on our own. And we have very few defenses, if any, against the madness that is occurring. And it seems that it will have no end. You look at this Gorsuch nomination, for example. The Democrats have not been able to score any points at all. You listen to the questions that they're asking, they limp, except probably for Al Franken, who squeezes out a good question or two. But this is the party that is supposed to be grilling the prospective U.S. Supreme Court justice on matters of law. And nobody came close to scoring any points at all on that matter. We look at the attitude of Donald Trump. Love him or hate him, and I kind of belong to the latter camp, but he has called this Republican Party to account, and to account on the plan that he has, the plans that he has put forward. He has told them point blank, if you don't step up to the plate, you are going to lose your seats. I mean, it's thuggery, but it's also leadership. Look how far down the road the Democratic Party has come, where they don't seem to care very much about anything. They don't seem to operate with the idea that there's a consequence to their inaction. And there doesn't seem to be a consciousness that they even have a leader at this point. I read an article in The Hill, which covers, you know, Congress, and it was filed just yesterday. It says, for Democrats, no clear leader. The Democratic Party has a leadership vacuum at the top, with many registered voters eager to see someone who is not currently on the scene become the party's standard bearer in 2020, according to a new Harvard Paris poll survey provided exclusively to The Hill. When registered voters were asked whom they view as the leader of the Democratic Party, 40% said it has no leader. 15% named former President Obama as the party's leader. 12% said Bernie Sanders of Vermont, who has gone out of his way not to join the Democratic Party despite running for the presidential nomination last year. 11% view Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts as the party's leader, and 10% answered with former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, the 2016 Democratic presidential nominee. On the question of who should be a Democratic presidential candidate in 2020, Sanders led the field at 14%, followed by former First Lady Michelle Obama at 11%, Warren at 9%, Clinton at 8%, Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban and New York Governor Andrew Cuomo each at 4%, and television personality Oprah Winfrey and Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey each at 3%. 45% said they want to see someone not on the list of possible candidates in the survey. What does that say? It says what we've been talking about for quite some time. The party's in chaos. It is actually unraveling. And it couldn't come at the worst time. And they haven't been called on it. And by the way, that includes Bernie Sanders, the sometime Democrat, sometime independent, now recruiting for the Democratic Party. We have no idea what the heck Bernie Sanders' status is. Are you still the lone independent person? Are you the head of this burgeoning movement that you should be growing? Or are you basically for rent? You're renting out your services to the Democratic Party that isn't going anywhere. It isn't going anywhere. It's dead on its feet. And it's been that way for years now. Even under Barack Obama, who had excited the imagination of so many across the nation to become involved, to become active with the Democratic Party. We saw recently in this attempt to breathe some kind of life into the party, to bring in some kind of oxygenated blood, we saw what the problem is. The party is in shambles. It has no money. It has been absolutely raped by Hillary Clinton and her bid for the presidency. It has been used and abused for personal gain. And it has no record to show of consistent advocacy and defense of the people who decided to support it, to vote for the Democratic Party. You know things are bad when the Republicans, who were in very bad shape, are now absolutely in possession of just about every prize, every political prize. They have the White House. They have both houses of Congress. They have the U.S. Supreme Court nominee. And they're moving along under the leadership of somebody you can't believe is as odious as he is. But they're taking care of business. What's the excuse? I'm saying again that we got to get very serious about the political stakes and the political consequences we already have begun to suffer under this administration. And I'm not saying that our problems have begun with this administration. We've suffered under 8 years of stagnation under a Democratic administration. And before that, we suffered under a previous Democratic administration as well, that created some of the most blistering consequences that we still have not been able to overcome. The largest prison industrial complex in the world, the highest rates of employment among young people, the attack, the total attack and dismantling of public education. And we could go on and on about essential services that our communities haven't gotten. The unrelenting problem of police killings. So these are not just mild consequences that we could ignore. The fact is, whether under Democratic administrations or this new one, which is Republican, our status remains decidedly quo. I say we have the right to threaten the Democratic Party and any other parties that we have played a role in supporting, to threaten them. I mean, when do you recognize the value of our support and the obligation to protect these vulnerable communities? When do you do that? You're having all kinds of summit meetings, lots and lots of conventions, and people sitting down and talking in, you know, pretty nice hotels at that. And they talk some more. They talk to each other. They talk at us. And there's no evidence that all of this talk and strategy planning is actually producing results. They're fat and happy. They're looking forward to retirement. They're building their status and their public profile. They're interested in getting money from whatever corporation for making vapid speeches. But they are not interested in a fight. They don't see that there should be a fight, that the war has been declared against their communities. And they should be in full war mode, tolerating no nonsense, and clear about what the objectives are. I mean, do you need any greater incentive than the person who is in the White House and an administration that is open about its hostility? But they're ducking and they're shucking and they're jiving. They're old and tired and worn out. They have no new ideas. And worst of all, they don't have the courage. They don't have the courage to stand up and fight. Everything is theoretical and hypothetical when the fallout is very, very real in these communities that have been suffering. Here is Maxine Waters sending out a tweet, because now it's a kind of game. It's the new way. It's a new in thing. You send out cryptic notes via Twitter. And hers was to watch for an impeachment. As if they're going to do it. as if they can do it. You have no power. You're still playing games with people's heads. Because here's the thing. If the Democrats were moving to impeach Donald Trump, we wouldn't know until it happens. They would shut up and get down to work. And when we know it is when it's happening. Talking loud and saying stupid things that in no way advances the quality of life and the opportunities for their distressed communities. We have to call Bernie Sanders on the carpet. What kind of game is he playing? Is you is or is you ain't? We are not interested in your ability to straddle the fence. We're impressed with your gymnastic qualities to be able to do that, but it doesn't bring a damn thing in terms of help to these distressed communities, and you're talking, and you're affiliated with a party you know is not in a position to do anything right now, even against a chaotic Republican Party. That's how bad it is. So you're going to pretend that you are in play, that people can look to you. You already betrayed. You betrayed the Green Party. You betrayed your own movement. And you're still there, still not having suffered the consequences of your betrayal. They've been so kind to you. They've allowed you, they've given you a pass. Even though you have made no act of contrition whatsoever, we are still supposed to believe that you're one of the Democrats. While, in fact, you should be, at this minute, the head of an independent party. You pulled a Jesse Jackson, and now you have no particular definitive identity. You go wherever the wind blows, wherever you can get some kind of an audience that would listen to your pratings, which have not translated into concrete results. You talk a lot. Elizabeth Warren talks a lot. We have a lot of talkers. And you obviously say, well, look, if the Democratic Party still has a bunch of people within it with value in terms of agitating for the benefits of the people, how come they're not doing that as a group, as a party, standing up for something, taking on a fight with the intention of winning? We're tired. Long gone are those days when people are supposed to be impressed that you hold a news conference and you say some words and then you disappear. I mean, that's done. The Green Party, are you serious as a party or you're not? If you're not, then we ought to leave you. People need to leave the party. If you're going to behave like the Democrats, There's no point in supporting you as a wannabe Democratic Party. You were able to go and raise $9 million to assist in a preposterous project that clearly was aimed at helping Hillary Clinton, this business of checking the vote. Do you not see now that those $9 million could well have gone into some vigorous organizing that would help you in this vacuum of leadership to step up and to step in? But you're kind of quiet. You're not in the communities. You're not organizing. You're not advocating. You're sending out these blogs and these. That's not leadership. And we have to call your attention to that and demand accountability from you, because an investment was made. An investment was made that you squandered. You blew it. And it is not okay to slink away, presuming that people will not call you to account, or that you have no obligation to account, as a so-called alternative to business as usual politics. You have become business as usual politics. I say that. You know, when I look at ways in which Americans today are literally clinging to life. And this isn't because of Donald Trump. Let's disabuse ourselves of that notion. This was happening under Barack Obama. It was happening under Bill Clinton. The system is rotten, corrupt, immoral, perverse, racist to the core. And we, by our inaction and by our silence, are condoning it. We are aiding and abetting it, as if we do not realize that we are the ones eating the awful consequences. We have to change. That's why I've been preaching here on this program the need for us individually and hopefully collectively to find a new way to protect ourselves. Because there is no definitive difference that I could see between the Democrats and the Republicans. They both subscribe to the same ideology. They both are conducting class warfare in ways that we haven't seen in decades. They both think it's okay because there has been historically no consequences to their actions. No real response, because the communities that they have targeted historically are so weak. And I don't say that as a criticism. That's what prolonged oppression does. It produces a weakened people that cannot sustain this self-defense, but for so long. And all those people talking are not really with them. Do you think that Betsy DeVos can go talk this nonsensical stuff or sell this lethal package about education and walk away unscathed from a white middle-class community anywhere in the United States? She can't. This is where we are. And we continue to walk the same road with the same attitudes, even though you see it leading to genocide. You see it leading to nowhere. It's a dead end. The parties, all of the parties now, in one shape, in one form or another, they're the same. They're the same. And we encourage them to regard their actions as being necessary to be the same, because it's working so well. It has worked so well. The people who should be fighting seem perfectly content with what is happening to them. The leadership seems perfectly happy to sit down once in a while and attend a breakfast or a luncheon or a dinner and shake hands and hobnob with the hobnobbables while their communities are bleeding. That's a working formula. So why change something that produces exactly the results that you want? They have cowed our leadership, so-called leadership, into silence and obedience and deference. So we're on our own. I'm saying let us make up our minds at some point real soon that in fact we are on our own. We have no allegiance to any political system, because they all have failed spectacularly at some of the very basic things. Sever your ties and let them know it. Look, I've shared with you a couple of times about my own epiphany around this issue. And it occurred inside a voting booth. I'm there, thrilled to do my civic duty and cast my vote. Among the first to arrive at the polling place. And it occurred to me, I'm being mugged in the voting booth. This is a stick-up in the voting booth. They're telling me to vote yes or no on a project that was about $400 million, described precisely and succinctly in three sentences. And that was enough information that I needed to make up my mind to say, yes, I agree. And that's when I decided I'm done. I will not be mugged in the voting booth. I will not be a victim to this process that regards me as an idiot. Who can be outsmarted and outdone at any time? No. So I was done with voting. That's more than 20 years ago. We are in crisis. And we cannot operate as if all things are okay. We are in crisis. And when you are in crisis mode, you have to do unusual and unorthodox things in your interest. The first thing we need to do is to sever ties or to have a strategic relationship, not an ongoing one. I am your friend and supporter insofar as I benefit from being your friend and supporter. That should be our attitude. The minute you go off course, I'm dumping you and moving on. But we slavishly maintain these relationships and create new possibilities for these systems to really let us have it. We contribute to our own annihilation. That makes no sense to me. We ought to call them out. And beyond calling them out, we have to defend ourselves because the number one rule is survival. It's the number one rule for them. We have to survive. We cannot survive supporting a system that is hell-bent on exploiting us to death. It's not going to work. You cannot love them into respecting you. You cannot support them with the hope that they would see how correct it is to return the favor. It's hardball. Organize your household. Organize your life so that to some degree, to some very strategic degree, you are able to survive without this kind of craziness. You have more than enough craziness to deal with. This shouldn't be one of them. I'm sick of it. I am sick of the leadership that is absolutely mediocre. I mean, just look at who we have in the White House. And then you look around and you see there's a heck of a lot more in the parties. There's a lot more of who he is and what he is in the people surrounding him, the system that they operate in. We are way down on the list of priorities for those people who are in the political world and who are in the legislative world and in the leadership world. We are just pawns. We do not get even the basic respect of recognition that we exist, that we have played a significant or major role in helping these parties arrive at a point where they can do battle. We undergird them because we buy into the idea that they will stand in for us. They will do the right thing. They're not even interested in us at all. So we have to get ruthless. We have no choice. And we have to get brutally honest with ourselves. Why are we going along with this nonsense? Why are we supporting this? Why do we act as if we are entitled to be mistreated? Why are we settling for this abysmally low level of leadership? It is terrifying that this is what we have. Supposedly, there are very, very bright people down there in Washington, D.C., and in the state legislature and in City Hall. But you tear away the outer coverings and you find mediocre, hateful people. People who are not the least bit suited for leadership, who can't be entrusted with that responsibility, but who have a vested interest in maintaining their position in politics. And that's where we come in. We are the mindless, unthinking, silly people who go along with the charade and give them our blessing to continue screwing us into the ground. Wake up, folks, and fight. It's about our survival, individually and collectively. I don't know anyone right now who is happy with life. They're concerned. They're worried. They can't sleep. An inordinate part of their day is taken up worrying. And even if they think they have a plan, they can't put it into to play because they don't have the resources to put it into play. But still, they worry. They worry. And they thought that by showing up on November the 8th, they had made an appropriate and smart investment in a system that could shield them a little bit against this very position that they now have in life. They thought that they were supporting something, a system that could give them a little bit of justice, a little bit of the quid pro quo. I support you, hoping that you would support me, hoping you would support my neighbors, my community. And then it turns out not to be true. And then it turns out that nothing is done about it. So we are three-time losers. I just want to encourage you to be real about where we are, to understand that this is a putrid system, to put an end to self-annihilation, to encourage us to see the possibility of a different way, to stop begging people and their parties to do the right thing. They won't. And to not say that these views, this way of thinking, is unacceptably pessimistic. I'm interested only that you come to a point of understanding that they are acceptably realistic. This is what we are experiencing. This is our reality. You know, here's a reality for me. Okay. Just giving you one example. There are countries that I seriously have to consider going to for medical treatment. I can't get it here. Why? Because in those countries, my health is the focal point of my treatment. In this country, whether I live or die, the focal point is how much money can be made off of me before I croak. One doctor told me some time ago, now this is standardized treatment. There's this new drug that's on the market. I started laughing the minute he started talking. It's going to cost between $15,000 and $20,000 a month. You see? So whether you live or you die, the idea is that you are a revenue source, not a human being who could use perhaps a new therapy or a new protocol. That's not the thinking. I am, walk in, this doctor sees me as his summer cottage. And recommending a mode of treatment that had not one or two or three or four, but five black box warnings against it. That's how dangerous it was. But he didn't tell me that. I told him that. And his eyes almost fell out of his head. The point I'm making is, in that system, if patients who, like voters, take the position that they'll accept whatever is given to them, if patients don't change their attitudes, if patients don't say, draw the line at this kind of craziness, it will just simply continue. And it will get worse. You see, we have to change our behavior because they are behaving really badly. And if they are the only ones suffering because of their bad behavior, I would have no problem. But, of course, They make it so that others suffer the consequences while they enjoy the benefits of whatever it is they set out to achieve for their own purposes. Look, I'm sorry about lecturing today, but this week, as we observed together the shenanigans in Washington, D.C., and we are told that this is our democracy in action, this is the thing we should be marveling at how great our country is in doing these things. These people who are doing all kinds of wrong things, massive corruption. We have to return to a brutal reality that we've got to find another way. This is unacceptable, and we have to see to our survival. We have to find another way. So I thank you so much for tuning in and indulging me this little rant today. Coming up next, the NDC Savings Club. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. Let me know what you think about this program, our program. And we'll see each other tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening.